पितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपददामायं ददाति स्वापदन्तिकं जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरी गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे मुखं करोति वाचालं पंगुं मलंगायते गिरिं यत्कृत्पदमहं वंदे श्रीगुरुदिनतारणं परमानन्दमाधवं श्रीचैतन्येश्वरं वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानं पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः हरे कृष्ण. So we chose this verse especially for today's occasion, for the blessings of all the Vaishnavas. We're not going to speak about sati, self-immolation, nor are we going to speak about child marriages or arranged marriages, nor are we going to speak about other things that are mentioned here. Because you already heard those classes a few times, I believe. What we're going to speak about is about the context in which this verse was spoken. It's called understanding the principle. Oftentimes we're very concerned with details, but we forget about the principles. This whole ninth canto is leading up to the tenth canto, as we heard yesterday, and the speaker, Shukadeva Goswami, is making sure that the audience is getting rid of some misconceptions. What are our misconceptions? We have misconceptions of mundane morality, of what is right and wrong. And they certainly get challenged here in this ninth canto. Have you felt that your conceptions or misconceptions of mundane morality felt a little challenged here in this ninth canto? We just had a romantic moment in the forest, but the guy was eaten by a Rakshasa. It was not any Rakshasa. He was the king who was cursed to be a man-eater, and just before he impregnated his wife, he was to be devoured by this Rakshasa. So, certainly the lady is quite upset, to say the least, and she is upset and disappointed, not so much so because she will not receive a child, but as she's stating in this verse, she's expressing her disappointment because the king is supposed to protect the citizens and not to eat them. Nowadays, we are in very similar situations where governments and leaders of all sorts, instead of protecting their citizens, are eating them in various ways, through taxes, through punishment, or even through destroying them wholesale. So this is a very unfortunate situation, therefore she is upset. And she's saying that before you commit this atrocity, better you eat me first, because I don't want to be part of this. I don't want to see this. I don't want to be part of this. So she could have said, hey, I'm going to eat my husband. Hey, go ahead, you know, like, maybe didn't like the guy, or maybe had other plans, and, you know, there's places to go and people to meet. There are always options in life. No, she was of the conviction that without my husband, I am a dead body. So, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions Vedic culture twice, three times. And Manu Sanghita is also quoted. So, we should touch on some of these points. Did you know that Manu said, I have spoken these laws for my people at my time, and you will have to apply these principles for your people in your time? Which means that you need to take brahminical guidance wherever you are and whoever you are to understand what are the laws of Manu and how they will apply in your time, in your situation. Just to give you an example. When Srila Prabhupada came to the West, he saw the situation and he saw that women were not protected. And therefore he opened ashrams also to ladies, to women, because he saw that they cannot practice Krishna consciousness peacefully at home, like in a Vedic culture, or even in India. So he opened ashrams for women, which is something unheard of in the Vedic culture. It's not there. But understanding the principle of protection, Srila Prabhupada made the adjustment in the detail. Now in Vedic culture, as we hear in the purport, there is provision for polygamy, that a man who is qualified and who is capable accepts more than one wife. But according to law of most countries of the world, and according to our directive in our society, it is not permissible. So then, are we going against Vedic culture or against Vedic tradition? No. Because the principle is protection. The detail is how it is applied. In a similar way, the principle is to preach and share Krishna consciousness with all living entities around the world. The details is how that is being actually executed, according to time, place, and circumstances. Formerly, people would just share Krishna consciousness by doing kirtan, but Srila Prabhupada, or giving a talk. But Srila Prabhupada said, if you would advertise that Bhaktivedanta Swami is sitting near the Ganges under a tree, nobody would come to hear me. Therefore, I am building this big temple so that the whole world will come here to hear me. Now he knew that probably he won't see it in his lifetime, that the temple will be built. But still the world will come here to hear Srila Prabhupada. Why? Because Prabhupada understood the principle. And he was not bothered by the detail that he would not be here. You see, if the vision that we're having is about us, then the vision will die with us. But if the vision is not about us, but the vision is something bigger, it's part of the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu of spreading Krishna consciousness, then the mission will go on, the vision will go on forever. So when you write your mission and vision statement, make sure it's not about you, because otherwise it will die with you. Now some people misunderstood that, but just to backtrack, in previous times, we're just starting now 11th canto in our course. So Krishna orchestrated the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty because some of his family members had become somewhat indifferent, even some of them had become inimical to him. So Krishna orchestrated their disappearance. Also, it is explained that some of them were demigods, they had to go back to their duties, and their time was up, and Krishna did not want them to feel overcome with grief and thus commit activities that would be regrettable. So he removed them from the earth. In a similar way, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left this world, there were many Sahajiyas, Apasampradayas, Kasko Swamis, who were claiming that they were the holders of the truth, the holders of the Holy Grail, that they were the ones who could actually disseminate Mahaprabhu's message. But the Mayavadis came in and they wiped them out wholesale. And they were practically wiped off completely. So we may ask ourselves, why is the Lord doing this? Because Krishna has a plan. So what is that plan? The plan of the universe, according to Jiva Goswami, is compassion. It is the Lord's compassion for the living entities to bring them back to Him. And whoever would like to assist the Lord in that plan becomes empowered. And whoever wants to obstruct that plan will become removed. In a similar way, protection is exercised, not just on a physical level, but on a spiritual level, by giving people shelter, by giving people spiritual practice and spiritual guidance. That is the whole mood and mission of why the Lord appears, and why He sends His incarnations, and why He reveals the teachings, and He disseminates them through His teachers. And whoever tries to obstruct will become washed away by time. Now someone may say, well, anybody and everybody and everything will get washed away by time. So what's so special about that? We had the 11 gurus who were ruling the world, and they had divided the world amongst themselves in different zones. Some of you smile. Most of the people don't know what we're talking about. So, because the history books haven't been written yet. It will take a little time, maybe 50 or 100 years more. Now everyone's too much concerned about other things. And now we have maybe 70, 80, 90 gurus. And with a few million of people practicing Krishna consciousness, this does not seem a very good logic. This does not seem like the math, the numbers are not matching, it's not working out. But some people are adamant, they say, no, this is the way it's supposed to be, and this is the way it's going to stay for 10,000 years. But who are we? We do not know the plan of the Lord. The point I'm trying to make is that if we get in the way of the current, of the flow of potency, we will be washed away. Because we cannot obstruct the Lord's desire. Because Daiva, or the spiritual potency, is stronger. Now this lady here, she was very educated, she was very cultured, she was very well behaved, and she gave many good arguments why the king should not eat her husband. And guess what's about to happen in the next few verses? We're not going to tell. Time is up. He's going to eat him. So stay tuned on this channel. He's going to eat him. And the third curse is about to happen. Why? Because destiny is stronger. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says something very beautiful that I would like to share with you, and it struck me. He says that no one is an eternal rogue. Rogue, yes. Rogue, as in rascal, or as in culprit, or as in criminal. And that gives me great solace, because it means, hey, there is hope. And it also means all the people who might be inimical towards me, or I may have some animosity or some disdain or some enmity towards, there is also hope for them. There is also provisions for them in that statement. No one is an eternal rogue. Saudasa, the king, will have to perform 12 years of atonement for his atrocities, and he will be purified. Also his spiritual master, his guru, Vasishta, who unjustly cursed him, also had to perform 12 years of atonement. But just stay tuned, as is to come pretty soon on this channel, he will impregnate Saudasa's wife to propitiate, to carry on the dynasty. Did you know that the person who will start the Brahminical order again in the next Satya Yuga, take one wild guess, who would that be? Who?
Ashwatthama.
Ashwatthama? You remember that person from the first canto? Isn't he an eternal rogue? isn't he one of the bad guys? He pretty much did everything wrong that you could do wrong, right? And he's still there in the Himalayas as we speak, performing atonement. But he will start again the Brahminical order, Vedi culture, for those of you, in the next Satya Yuga, which shows that there is hope for everybody. Now, before we get too carried away, let me check my notes here. Now, in a society where the theology, the laws, and the practice differ, people will call such a society hypocritical, unproductive, or irrelevant. Nowadays, it is very much en vogue, or in fashion, to speak a more plausible terminology, to throw the book at people, which means that you preach fire and brimstone, jihad, or what is the Hare Krishna terminology for that? Vedic and non-Vedic, or modern and ancient? And most people won't know what you're talking about because they just had khichdi and, you know, they got plans for the day. But people will pick up on the mood. They will pick up on the attitude. They will pick up on the arrogance. They will pick up on the disdain that comes across in these types of activities. And people don't concern themselves really too much. Whether you're riding an elephant, or you're riding on a rickshaw, or you're walking, they don't concern themselves too much whether you're sitting up in the boardroom, or you're sitting down in the boiler room, or in the janitor's room, or you're sitting at home. What people do concern themselves about is, what is your message? And how do you deliver that message? Srila Prabhupada came to give us this culture, this Vedic culture, in a mood of compassion, in a mood of concern, and in a mood of inclusiveness or inclusivity. Which one is it? Probably both. To make everyone feel, yes, we can be part of this. Yes, we can do this. Yes. So much so that he first gave initiation and then he posted the rules the next day on the wall. How about that? For a little change in strategy. Now nowadays you may not want to try this at home, okay? For all of you future gurus out there, okay? That has been done. But he made a point that he was ready to adjust the detail in order to serve the principle, in order to attract people to Krishna consciousness, in order to show mercy and compassion to them. When he went into the kitchen and he took that sweet ball and he popped it in his mouth, somebody may say, "Oh, whoa, whoa, he's eating in the kitchen. Has this been offered? This is muchi. This is offensive." But he was doing it to show affection and appreciation and love for his disciple who had made this preparation. For whom? For him! Sometimes we're very concerned of going through the rituals and motions and feeding the pictures and doing all the things that we do. But when the people are here, we're either negligent or callous or indifferent or harsh with them. So Krishna kindly has given us a few years before this temple will open to get up to speed so that we can actually imbibe his mood, imbibe his mission of compassion, of care, of hospitality, of inclusiveness, to make people feel welcome, make them feel appreciated, make them feel, yes, we can be here. We're not going to be herded around like chickens or goats by some people wielding either microphones or walkie-talkies or sticks, and some other people harassing us on the street and inside the temple for money and trying to extract as much as they can from us. Because Jesus threw out the vendors from the temple. That has already been done. We don't have to do it again. Maybe we might have to do it again. Because time and time again, we become a little forgetful and a little complacent. And we try to just do what's convenient. Just do what is practical. Just do what makes me feel good. Now this lady is not trying to do what makes her feel good. She says, you better eat me first before you eat my husband. And stay tuned on this channel. In just a very short time, she will enter the fire and go to where her husband is. Why? Because she understood the principle and she followed the principle. Now our principle is, what does it take to preach Krishna consciousness? What does it take to actually deliver this message? St. Francis said you should always preach, and sometimes you should also speak. What does that mean? It means that by our activity, by our actions, we should always convey this message, this principle of Krishna consciousness. And yes, we should also speak according to time, place, circumstance, to reach the audience, to make that connection, and to help the people understand. For without preaching, we're no better, to use Srila Prabhupada's words, than a dead body. His Guru Maharaj used to say, if you have life, you preach. Reverse, if you do not have life, you're a dead body. That is what happens when you do not preach. One time Prabhupada, he asked, I don't remember if it was Hari Sori or Bhavananda, but they had a, telescope? And he said, check out what's going on over there in Yogapit. And the devotee was looking and looking and looking. And so Prabhupada said, so what is going on over there? And he said, nothing. And Prabhupada said, exactly, nothing. That's what's going on. Nothing. Brahmananda Prabhu said that ISKCON means money. Gaudiya Math means no money. That's what Prabhupada told him. Prabhupada wanted to join the Gaudiya Math. He wanted to publish his books with them. He was ready to work under one of the current heads. But they were not seeing the opportunity. They were not seeing his potential. When Prabhupada started ISKCON, he did not recruit janitors, cheerleaders, or fundraisers. If you want me to repeat that, janitors, cheerleaders, or fundraisers. No, he saw the future Bhaktivedantas. He saw the people who would carry this message forward, would not try to franchise it, would not try to make it corporate, would not try to just keep it for themselves, but he was looking for the people who were ready to take this message and spread it to the whole world. That was his vision, right from the beginning. And that vision is still what carries us, it's still what floats us, it's still what drives us forward in Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada's vision is massive. It is all-encompassing, and it includes many, many different facets, and there is place and space for everybody. And it is all based and founded on how do we treat each other, how do we treat ladies, how do we treat old people and children, how do we treat each other, because that is the example that people will see. Why does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita, amongst women I'm fine speech, I'm memory, intelligence, What else is there? Remind me. It's early in the morning.
Fame.
Fame, yeah, what else? Fortune, yeah, we had that one. And? I got it written down somewhere, but, you know, that's the thing with notes. steadfastness and patience. Why? Because without women, you don't have a society, you don't have a culture. It's not possible. So, a lot could be said, and a lot has been already said. So I would like to stop here and ask if there's any questions. Hare Krishna. Not all at once.
Yes, Tulsi Prabhu.
Thank you. Hare Krishna, thank you for the nice class, Prabhu. I would like to ask from your experience, what do you think is the best, the biggest strength and
what is the biggest
strength and the biggest weakness of ISKCON nowadays?
Thank you. Maharaj Yudhisthira was asked, what is the greatest mystery? What is the greatest wonder? Ahani Ahani Bhutani, he said, everyone's dying, but everybody's thinking, I'm going to be here forever. I'm going to beat the system. So, the greatest failure of any generation, including the current generation, is not to recognize the potential in the youth and to train and empower them and to hand things over to them and to think that I'm going to be here forever because I just got a few more things on my to-do list that I need to get done. And the greatest strength is Srila Prabhupada's compassion and his clarity of thought and his genius, how he built this society based on the principle of protection and giving shelter to all living entities for the next 10,000 years. So, since you've asked, those to me seem to be the greatest strength and the greatest failures or weaknesses. Any other points? Comments? Objections?
In Vrindavan, there was a lot of unmarried women a long time ago. And Srila Prabhupada noticed this and he said, in our movement, we want all the women to be married and all the men to be brahmacharis. And then he laughed and says, I think we have a controversy. Can you comment on that?
Well, he also mentioned that even though we tell the men, they're not listening, so there is hope. Achintya kalaye tans tarkena na yojayet. All seeming contradictions are resolved in the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, or as they say in California, it's all good. It will work out. River without us. So we shouldn't be worried about the world nor about the movement. What we should be worried about is, what am I going to do to apply and imbibe this principle of protection and preaching of sharing Krishna consciousness with the world? What am I going to do? in order to make this happen. So the point is not so much whether you're married or not married, or what is your status, so to speak. The point is, am I actively seeking out that protection? Because it takes both ways, you see. As living entities, we're all female, and we all need protection, and Krishna is our only protector, and the spiritual process is our protection. But are we actually taking shelter of that opportunity? You know, there was a time in my life when I thought, yeah, I'm in this movement and I'm a devotee and I'm doing okay, you know? So everything's fine. But then as I saw, as other people were looking to me for guidance and shelter, I started to realize, well, maybe I'm not that guided and that sheltered myself. Because I started to fill in the blanks and sometimes it got a little... So, and then I thought, well, if I tell people to take shelter, but I'm not taking shelter myself, what does that make me? Maybe, you know, I should start doing my homework. And as soon as I looked for shelter and spiritual protection, Krishna arranged it and he offered it. So, because you have some people, they're married, but they're not very married. And you have other people, they're not married, but they're actually married. You understand the point? Because the principle is protection and shelter. So, and that takes a conscious effort and an understanding that I am prakriti, I'm creation, I'm small, I'm dependent. I cannot be an independent operator. I will become miserable. I will fail in my attempt to control and enjoy and manipulate this world. And that's why we have these classes. That's why we study all these books, to understand these points. Otherwise, bhayam dhritya abhiniveshitasya rishare pat apitasya vipariyo smriti tanayatam buddhabhaje tvam. What's the last one? Guru Devatatma. So, fear arises when we become forgetful of our identity and the identity of the Lord. Tasmād gurum prapadyeta jigyasu shreyutamam shabde parecha nishnatam brahmani upashram ashrayam. It is stated in the Bhagavatam, if you actually have a plan to become happy. Who here has a plan to become happy in life? Who here likes to be miserable? Who doesn't know? Who doesn't understand? So if you actually have a plan to be happy in life, you should search out a spiritual master. Who is a spiritual master? A person who has understood and realized the Vedic scriptures and surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is a spiritual master. And serve him. And inquire from him. Then we can actually become happy. But that means that we understand the principle of spiritual protection. And we do not see it in a limited way. Any other points? Yes. Need a microphone over there.
Hare Krishna. Sorry, I want you to throw more light on this for me. It said in the Vedic culture there is a system known as Sati or Saha Marana, in which a woman dies with her husband. So I don't really... Was it like a to-do thing or something like that? I don't know.
I couldn't understand your last point. What? Was it?
Like a must to do or...
A must? No, absolutely not. But the option was there. So, Those who want it, they did. And then when it become something forced, then it was stopped and it was made illegal. As you can see here, for this lady, she couldn't imagine herself living without her husband. She felt more pain from the separation than from the fire. So she chose the fire. She chose the lesser pain. If you have two evils, you choose the lesser of two evils, right? Now for us it's not understandable because we have plans, things to do, people to meet. We think like, you know, this is crazy. Huh? But because they are going by a different principle, by a different culture, so there is a different hierarchy of activity.
A woman without a husband is like a dead body. So does it mean a lady can take to celibacy?
One can?
Like you said, a woman without a husband is like a dead body.
Yeah.
So does it mean that a lady can be a celibate?
It's possible, but it's not recommended. So there are rare exceptions, yes, but for the most part the injunction is that all women should be married. So those are the injunctions that we have. How we apply them in today's context, that applies to time, place and circumstance and individual. That has to be seen in practical life. I don't know if that helps, but that's the answer. Other points? Let me see if I got something nice to say here before closing up. So as a conclusion, how can we exercise our minute freedom to take shelter in Krishna's order and share Krishna consciousness? It's a little difficult, like a chaste wife following her husband, understanding fully well that everything else will end up in frustration and misery. So instead of expanding our material plans, let us expand the preaching. Let us expand our plan making for sharing this message of Krishna consciousness, because that will really help us to exercise our freedom in the best possible way. Srila Prabhupada showed to us by his own example how to do that. And now we have Gita Jayanti coming up. I think tonight is the inauguration of the Gita Mela. Gita Jayanti. Okay, so what's tonight? They have something going on tonight. In any case, get ready. If you haven't tried it out yet, go out on Harinam. Go out and distribute a few books. Talk to some pilgrims. It's interesting to see what happens. Because people are actually looking for guidance, they're actually looking for inspiration, they're actually looking for spiritual solace in life. So, if we make ourselves available, we can actually convey this message and give people this opportunity. That would be a wonderful experience. So, we're here in Mayapur, and whoever is watching and listening, you can also do that in your places. You have a few days left for the month and a few days till Moksha Day Ekadasi. So make plans. You know? Get a few cases of Bhagavad Gita's and share them with your friends. See what it does for you and how you can apply this principle of spiritual protection and how you can see yourself as a part of this grand mission of Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gopamanandi.